The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 41 for February 27th, 2006. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton, and I'm here with...
John Braun.
How are you, John?
Fantastic.
That's good. Sorry about that. I'm standing up for the first time here in the top of the TMO Towers, and I hit the mic stand as I was coming back to the mic to introduce us after the little musical introduction. So, there you go. And I'm sick, so I don't know how long this show's going to last. It's going to last as long as the chloroseptic holds out in my throat. And once the razors come back, I'm out of here. How are you, John?
Can't complain.
Well, you could complain. I mean, we call it a rant, but you know.
Well, maybe I have a rant. Yeah, I don't know if I want to start with a rant. We did that before.
We did that once before. You surprised me by starting with a rant. Well, I'll tell you, the MacBook Pro arrived. And I've had about 5 days to play with it here. So
They made good on their promise. It did arrive.
It did. And so we'll talk about that. And then we've got some little bit of reader feedback, a little bit of listener feedback to go through. And then that's that. So that's our show for this evening. But of course, in addition to being made possible by the wonderful efforts of the folks that make Chloroseptic, this show is brought to you by two wonderful, very gracious sponsors, the first of which is the Think Different Store at thinkdifferentstore.com. And these folks sell just about everything for your every thing you would need for your iPod and your Mac. All sorts of little cases for your iPod. They've got a great little engine on the site where you can pick what sort of iPod you have. And then you can see what, you know, and then you pick what you need. You need a case or you need a charger or whatever you need. And you can drill down and sort of, you know, narrow it down by the type of iPod and whatever it is you need. All that stuff at thinkdifferentstore.com. Make sure to visit them and make sure you use the coupon MacGeek when you check out for $5 off your purchase at thinkdifferentstore.com. And our other sponsor, of course, is Audio Engine USA at audioengineusa.com.
And, you know, I want to tell you what I did with, you know, the speakers they graciously provided us to check out. I actually replaced my stereo system downstairs. I used to have one of these boxes and I wired in the audio, but I replaced it with these speakers. And the thing that really amazes me is just the bass response. It is as good as one of those kind of mini boom boxes. And then I also have the AirPort Express hooked up on the back so I can stream my stuff. So it's and of course with the charger, so it's a perfect solution. They sound a lot larger than they look. I think you'll agree.
Yeah, I do agree. They built the enclosures such that the low end just rocks out of them. So audioengineusa.com, the speakers, the A5s, are available for $349 a pair. And I believe I just checked and it said that they were shipping, the next batch was shipping tomorrow. So and that would be February 28th. So looks like they've got some stock available, at least at the moment. So get them quick.
Excellent.
Yep.
And these will have they'll have the neighbors calling.
All right. So the MacBook Pro made it. And I got to say, so far, I'm relatively pleased. Now, you need to understand, my main machine, John, of course, prior to the MacBook Pro, was a 1.67 gigahertz PowerBook, G4 PowerBook. So the fastest PowerBook you could get in the 15-inch configuration, and that had 2 gigs of RAM in it, and the MacBook has 2 gigs of RAM too. And the biggest question, of course, that I'm getting asked from people is, okay, yeah, we know the native stuff is going to be really fast. And they're right. The native stuff is really fast. Just having two processors, if you've never had that before, it makes a huge difference with OS X. Be it, you know, dual G4s or dual G5s or dual Intels, just having the OS have the ability to do different things with this other processor. While one app is running, you know, if an app is doing something with the processor, oftentimes on a single processor Mac, you know, window drawing and all that stuff kind of gets slowed down. Yeah, there's the graphics chip, but somebody's got to hand off to the graphics chip. And having a, you know, another processor available to sort of offload that stuff back and forth makes a big difference. And it of course holds true with the Intel stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you seen, like, with menu meters, one of our favorite utilities, yep. I assume it shows two processors.
Indeed it does. I had not updated to the universal binary version of menu meters. So when I started it up, after I migrated my stuff over, and we can talk about that, menu meters didn't run, and I almost thought I was going to have to send the computer back, but, you know.
Yeah, it is that important.
It is. But yeah, no, it shows up as two, and everything.
And the load?
What's that?
And the load? I mean, do you notice? I mean, does it, you know, seem to be taking advantage of both processors?
Absolutely. Yes.
Outstanding.
Yeah. And it
nice work.
So, yeah, so the native stuff, the OS, you know, Safari, I don't use Mail, but, you know, some of the iApps, iChat certainly, all that stuff runs really, really fast, much faster than on my Dual G4, which is the machine I podcast from, the Dual 1.5.
Now, for graphics, what does this have again for graphics? It's
we'll get back to that. It's an ATI, it's some high-end ATI chip. You can look
it's
it up
there, but I think it's like a 256.
Yeah, I believe megabyte. You're right. I believe you're right.
Maybe it's just, I want to make that observation that it's... Yeah. Some good graphics.
It's got, yeah, and I haven't done a whole, I'm not a graphics guy. I don't do a lot of game playing. I don't do a lot of graphics editing. So I'm really the wrong guy to ask about that sort of thing. But the big question everybody's been asking me is, how does the Rosetta stuff work? And I've done some benchmarks, but benchmarks are useless. Really, what you need to do is sit down and use a machine. And I do use quite a few apps that are still Rosetta. I use, of course, the Microsoft Office suite, mostly Word and Excel. I use FileMaker a lot. My mail program, MailSmith, it runs under Rosetta. So I've always got at least two or three Rosetta apps running, if not more. And let me tell you, coming from the fastest PowerBook available, even on this one, the Rosetta apps run way faster than they did on my PowerBook. They launch faster and they run faster. Now, part of the launch faster thing, I know Rosetta apps are supposed to launch slower, dollars for donuts, on the Intel stuff, simply because it's got more to read from the disk, more libraries or something. But remember, on my MacBook, I have a 7200 RPM drive, and on my PowerBook, I only have the 5400 RPM. So that could be part of it. But they launch plenty fast, and they run, they rock. It you know, there's no comparison, much, much faster. So I highly recommend it. There are a couple things that didn't work though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to drink my tea though.
Yeah. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the, cause this now has the camera and the remote control.
It does. It has both. And the camera's interesting. You know, I had an iSight on my PowerBook and wind up chatting pretty regularly with my brother from the machine. So, you know, if I don't use it every day, I probably use it, you know, four times a week. And the first thing I noticed was that this camera is way sharper than my previous iSight. The picture is much clearer on it. That said, I use a piece of software from Ecamm Networks called Eyeglasses, and they have a universal binary version of it out. And do you know what this software is, John?
Lets you basically, I guess, really dig into the camera settings beyond what you can do with like iChat.
Exactly. And it can make the picture look a lot better. What I noticed immediately was that the hardware brightness controls on this camera are not as robust or don't have as much range as the hardware brightness did on my previous iSight, because I noticed the eyeglasses has a slider, brightness slider, from 0 to 100, and this one pretty much passed about 40, nothing changes. Now they do also have a software brightness, which will, you know, use some software tricks to enhance the brightness. Of course that works just fine, but that has nothing to do with the camera itself. So overall, the iSight picture, My brother complains. He says it looks like the day after, because it's a little bit red and a little bit weird. He says it's clearer, but a little bit redder. So
the day after being a recent movie,
not that recent, but you know, he kind of lives in the past anyway. So that's just how it goes. But, you know, it is nice having it in the camera. It was a little weird. You know, I got used to looking, I had the EyeSight mounted on top of my PowerBook. And so I was used to having the camera basically looking straight at me. Whereas now, because the camera's in the bezel, my image is definitely, you know, more of looking up at me, which is sort of a little strange, but whatever. It works just fine. And I'm sure it'll be handy when I take it on the road, because I won't have to pack that extra now, piece of hardware.
I have a question that everybody's been asking.
Do you? The sky...
About your new machine, excuse me.
What's that?
No, actually, battery.
Well, that's...
Battery life.
Yep.
What have you observed?
Running a typical session, I get about 2.5 hours. Now, that's with both processors going. There is a way... In the control panel, there's a separate control panel, system preference pane called processor now, where you can actually shut down one of the processors. And it shuts off the second processor. That adds a little bit to the battery life. It would add maybe, based on what I could tell, maybe 30 minutes. I haven't run it enough to really get a good benchmark out of it that way. But the battery life it's not stellar. But I think if I was on a plane watching a DVD... I could shut off the second processor and dim the brightness a little bit and probably get, you know, maybe 3.5 hours out of it. That's what I would expect based on what I've seen so far.
Okay. So yeah. That sounds not stellar, but okay.
It's not stellar. No. And you can actually put there's a little menu item that will let you turn the processors on and off, but I was having trouble making it work alongside menu meters. So naturally menu meters went out and I leave both processors running all the time. That's just...
Now, there's also a developer tool, Chud. I don't know if you ever used it.
I have. I haven't used it on the new machine. Chud is along with Xcode now, right? And that's what it gets installed.
Yeah, and sometimes it comes separately. It's a computer hardware understanding developer tools. But it does have a tool. It's actually a pref pane that will show you, it will tell you about your processor, and it will let you do similar things like...
Really?
Turn off the cache, whatever you'd want to do that, I wouldn't know, but also to kick out one processor.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Just thought I'd toss that in for the developers out there.
I'll have to play with that. Let's see.
Heat? How's the heat?
I
remember my G4, I had one that really burned. There were some definite heat issues.
I've touched the bottom of it. I haven't done any... a whole lot of computing with it on my lap, but I've touched the bottom of it and it doesn't seem, you know, even when it's running at what I would consider a normal load for a period of time, it doesn't appear to be, you know, overly hot. It's not like we have a case of the PowerBook 5300 recurring or anything here. No, I think we're in fine shape.
Cool.
With the heat. Yep. The one thing that doesn't run that I rely on greatly is default folder. There is no universal binary yet, and the Rosetta version will not attach itself to the current Finder. So that was sort of a sad thing to get used to, but hopefully the folks at St. Clair will remedy that shortly. If you're listening, please put me on the beta. I need it. And Audio Hijack Pro, which of course we used to do the podcast. Thankfully we don't do the podcast from my MacBook Pro, because Audio Hijack Pro will not hijack audio from any Rosetta apps, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and of course Skype now currently runs as a Rosetta app. There's the new version of Skype coming out, but until then, very limited support there. So that's the issue. But I had what was I doing the other day that I could not possibly have done? I had a video, an AVI version of the entire Pink Floyd set, the 26 minute or whatever it was set from Live 8.
Oh, yes.
And so I had that running double size, and I have the MacBook Pro connected to my cinema display, which worked fine. And I had that running double size on the MacBook Pro screen, which is a much nicer screen than the PowerBook. It's a tighter resolution now. And I was able to do all my work, no problem. The processor was, both processors were probably sitting at about 30% or so while the movie was running. Sound was fine. And I was able to do whatever I needed to do and noticed no difference. Also noticed, as far as CPU usage goes, while video chatting, it used to really take up a lot of CPU when I was doing an iChat video chat. That would pretty much max out my CPU. And these days, that's not an issue at all. It sits at, you know, maybe both processors are sitting at about 20%. So I have plenty of room to do whatever it is I want to do while I'm video chatting, which is cool. You know?
So you're going to keep it?
Definitely. Yeah. I'm happy with it. I'm a little leery of my first road trip, which will be at the end of March. I've got to head down to Austin, I think on the 26th. So in theory, we have a podcast to do while I'm on the road, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But there's 4 weeks between now and then, so hopefully some solutions will present themselves. It seems like every day there's, you know, five new vendors that announced universal binary support. So yep. Think we'll be all right. So
yeah. So that's the downside of having it announced basically six months early.
6 months early. Well, yeah, and being right on the bleeding edge. I wouldn't recommend this for it, unless you need to buy a new laptop today. And if you do, I would highly recommend going with the MacBook. I would unless you've got a real reason to go with the PowerBook, I would go with the MacBook. But if you don't need to buy either one, don't wait. You know, 3 months. Wait till I don't think there's going to be any hardware issues, at least not what I've seen thus far. But as far as application support goes, it will get better. That said, for the most part, there's not a whole lot of problems. I mean, it just worked. I did have a weird thing, and I kind of have to speak poorly about the AppleCare representatives that I talked to. I did the...
Do that.
What's that?
Can you do that?
Oh, you're about to hear me. no,
oh, brother.
I did the migration. I did the FireWire migration. I plugged in my PowerBook via the FireWire cable and did the whole thing. And that
That's a nice tool, the migration assistant.
And I've used it many, many times, right? And it worked in the past, no problem. And this time I didn't anticipate any problems. And it came across and everything worked fine. I looked, all my keychain data was there. Great. All my Safari autofill form data was there, but I couldn't, when I went to do anything with username and passwords, all the username and passwords that were saved in Safari previously were gone. Now, they were still in my keychain, so I could look them up and type them in, and then Safari would remember, but it was like somehow Safari and the keychain, Safari's got its own cache that's different from the keychain.
And I've seen sometimes Safari comes up and says, hey, something's changed with your keychain. Do you want me to sync up with it?
Yeah, but that wasn't it. It's not doing the sync. And so I thought, wow, geez. And I hunted all over the place to see if I could figure out, you know, where this data is stored. And I can't find it. And it's driving me crazy. So I called up AppleCare and I said, I explained to the person. And they passed me along to someone else. And I told them what was going on. And
did you go to level two?
Yeah. And you know what level two told me? They said, well, we spoke with a product specialist, and the answer is there's an incompatibility between the PowerPC and the Intel chip. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And they said, well, that's what they told us. I said, now, does this make any sense? You people wrote it so that to the lay user, there's no difference. It's transparent. It doesn't matter what OS it's running on. And yet you couldn't figure out how to get your own passwords from the same version of Safari on one platform to the other. So I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that this is an Intel machine. I think something screwed up in the migration assistant and the data's there. Yeah.
Yeah, unequivocally, I could confirm that.
Unequivocally, yeah. if they can figure out how to do Rosetta... Right, but they can't figure out how to get their own passwords across? No.
It's a piece of data in a file that may have a dependency on the platform it's on, but you know, you can read files and write files. It's, you know, it's pretty easy to do. You may have to encrypt, decrypt, sign, you know, verify the signature, do some security stuff, permissions, who the heck knows, but like the Intel chip is blocking the ability to do that.
unless they very specifically added.
You know, in their smoke-filled room somewhere, had the mad Intel scientist going, ah, now we will get Apple.
We will thwart their plans. I mean, come on. And I said to him, I said, that's a cop-out answer. And they said, well, that's what they told me. I said, well, then they gave you a cop.
I want to speak to they.
Yeah, let me talk to them. Well, you can't talk to them. Okay. So I'm going to call back when I'm, you know, when I've got more time to deal with these kinds of people.
Ask for Steve.
Yeah, but if any of you out there know where this is stored, and really, I know all I need to do is tell it, resync with the keychain, and my life will be complete. But no.
Huh.
No.
Have you looked at a keychain access?
Yeah, I did first aid and the whole deal. No, like I said, the data's there. It's just not coming up.
Yeah, that was a good rant.
I hope
deserved. I mean,
I hope somebody has a solution for me because I'm. Really...
You know, I mean, say you know we never heard of that one. Well, let's open a case and
yeah,
get someone on it. And
I did post to the discussion boards.
Yeah, I mean, give us a dump of your whatever. There's some diagnostic things you could do to send them.
Yeah.
But,
there's a log, there's the migration log that sits out in the var log folder, right?
Perfect. So, I mean, something probably blew up or couldn't read a file or something.
Yeah, something. And I'd be happy to send them any or all of that stuff. But no, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a coworker use it because, that they had a coffee mishap.
Uh-oh.
Here's a tip. You probably put it, don't put anything in your coffee. Because certain things in your coffee cause certain things inside computers to not work well.
Like sugar, so you mean?
First thing I asked was, did you put either milk or sugar in the coffee? It's like, yes, tons. I'm like, oh, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
I suspect in a lot of cases, black coffee, if there isn't anything added to it, would act more as... I mean, water could still damage things. Because water is really pure water. There's something in there that could cause wreak havoc. But I mean... You know, either milk or whatever. But anyway, so went to the Apple store. They're like, let it try to dry out. Didn't work. Turned it, brought it back. And they took the hard drive out. A friend had a case, a FireWire case or a USB case. And the migration assistant brought it all over to it's one of the last 15-inch PowerBooks that she got.
Okay.
But it brought everything over. The only problem we're having is with Notes, which, Notes is a disaster.
Yeah, I wonder if Notes will run a Rosetta.
Misfortune to use it. Actually, I saw that they had a conference. I think they're up to version, we're using, 6 dot something, and I think they're up to 7, but I actually did see an article from someone at IBM who bought Lotus saying that they're committed, which is good because actually it runs on a lot of platforms. Probably one of the good things about Notes.
I think that's the only good thing about Notes.
Email and scheduling with it. But yeah, you probably used it throughout your... career. But
I used it a little bit back in my Citibank days. We actually used Notes a little bit to interface with the people over at Philips, actually. And I did a little bit of development on it. It was pretty crazy. But it's definitely the whole replication thing with Notes is potentially very, very powerful thing if used properly.
One thing is it gets very confused as to whether it's installed or not.
Oh,
you
really? Got
to go surfing in your library preferences folder. And there's a few things you got to get rid of. It tries very hard to convince itself that it's still installed, and it'll look everywhere, like including trash folders. Because we're trying to reinstall, and it kept saying update instead of clean install. And we're like, what the heck is going on? As it turned out, it found a remnant of the last version in the trash, and it kept thinking it was installed. It's like, and you look at the app itself. I mean, most well-written, I think, OS X apps, here's a little rant here. It's a single file, and inside of it, it's a package. And
right.
There's all this stuff. You look at Notes, and the folder, it installs a folder which is an explosion of DLLs and components, and it's not the way to do it. It's like even the PC days. Ew. You know, keep everything in one package, but, the user probably doesn't need to know there's 500 DLLs in there.
Right. Yeah,
but Notes makes you painfully aware of that, and it also sprinkles itself about it. it's...
Even on the Mac,
guys,
huh?
Come on. Yeah, I mean, the good news is it runs on the Mac.
That's right. And I think I remember seeing something that we ran on TMO that said that they were going to make a universal binary version of Notes. I think.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. Of course, you could.
Yeah, but I saw something to that effect, too. They're committed to it.
Yeah, which is good. All right, so you want to go through a couple of these audio comments and then we'll get out of here? No?
Well, yeah, all right.
Yeah? No? All right.
Twist my arm. Let's do it.
All right. The first one we will do from Simon about a little iPhoto question. I think. Oh, you know, sometimes.
Hit the button, man.
Yeah, well, you know, the mute button, it doesn't always play nice. Let's see about it this time. Simon.
Hello, Dave and John. My name's Simon from the UK. I've got a question for you about iPhoto. I've been using iPhoto 5 for a while, and that's been great. I use a PowerBook, and I take a lot of pictures and tend to keep the last couple of months on the hard drive. I don't really have space to keep the whole library on there. I've got 300 gigabytes of photos now. And I like to keep the last few photos on the hard drive as I move around. Now, it was great before because I could easily archive the photos off nicely in year, month, and day folders. But I noticed that iPhoto 6 keeps them all in roll directories, and that's kind of screwed up my archiving system now. So as I keep the last couple of months in the computer, they're all in these roll directories, and it's a lot of work to copy them off to my archive into the nice, neat year, month, day directories that I was using with iPhoto 5. Wonder if you have any solution, or if there's some clever way we can do it, the automator or something like that. Would appreciate your thoughts.
All right. Well, you want to take this one, John, or you want me to take it?
Oh. That's a good one.
You're going to stick me with it, aren't you? My first thought is that archiving from the iPhoto folder on the hard drive is probably a really, really bad idea, because in that folder, obviously there's all the subfolders, and the format of that has changed, as you've seen, Simon. But in that folder, along with each of your photos, is the original copy of the photo, if you've made any changes to it, any thumbnails that have been created, and you could have, you know, many iterations of the same photo out there, depending on what you've done with it and where you've done editing and that sort of thing. And my feeling is that it would be a horrible mess to archive that stuff off. So really, to do any archiving, what we do here, at least at Hamilton Household, is we use internally to iPhoto, we do smart albums based on date, and archive those off, and then you can delete from there, and then of course empty the trash. But that to me would be not only a way of restoring the functionality that at least you thought you had previously, but actually doing it in a way where when you take the CD or DVD that you've archived off to and put it back in, iPhoto will actually read it and integrate it into your library while the disk is in the drive. What do you think, John?
Now, I do have a thought, though. There is and I think, the reason I tossed it to you is I haven't done this very frequently.
Right.
But there is an export within iPhoto, which I think, actually, you talk about burning off to CDs. I mean, I guess that would be one thing.
Yeah, you just burn
off DVDs or something.
Not a playlist, but you burn an album. You know, you make an album, either a smart album or a custom album, and then just burn that off to CD, DVD, whatever you like.
Yeah, and when I've done that, actually, they come out in a format where if you put it in a Mac, it will recognize it as a
as its own
show.
Album.
And actually, so that's probably a good way to do it. But I think, if I had to do anything like that, I'd be very, just because Apple and just software people in general are prone to change where they put things. So,
So
trying to second guess that, if anything, I would stick within the app itself. And, like I mentioned, there is an export feature, at least in the iPhoto I have in front of me, under the share menu. And I would, much rather use what they support in the app, because it's likely to be supported by something else that sees it.
Yeah, that's that. Travis had a question about deleting applications, and I'm going to do my best to make it so that it will actually play this for us all. Mm-hmm.
Hi guys, this is Travis. I've been trying to delete an app for some time now, and when I try and delete it, it says the operation cannot be completed because the item is in use. And I know it's not in use because I don't see it in use anywhere, and I've checked the activity monitor and I can't find it on my activity monitor, so If you could help me out, that'd be great. Thanks.
You want to take it, or is it back to me again?
Wow. Well, you know, my initial, but I'm going to give you my initial reaction to that.
Yep.
There's our pal RM-F, if you go to the command line.
You be careful with that.
Yes, you have to be very careful. Warning, warning, danger, danger. You can screw up your whole computer if you do.
That's right.
But my initial reaction for those stubborn apps would be to go into the terminal, change over the directory, and do an rm-f. What that basically says, rm is the remove command. Dash f means do
force.
It. Force. Yeah. Like, really, even if there's a little problem somewhere. Now, if that doesn't work, then yeah, that gets sticky because something's holding on to it, and I'm really wondering what it is. I don't know if a permission check would probably couldn't hurt.
Permission check, yeah. My thought was that
may have something weird set saying, "Hey, you." Even maybe it doesn't think that you know they're the owner anymore.
Yeah.
Of the file.
Well, he said that
it says in use. So
in
yeah,
use. Yeah.
Running, that's weird.
Well, my thought was to check the, if you go into system preferences and go to accounts and then go into login items, it's possible that you've got something running without you knowing it. There are things that can start up when your Mac starts up. Now, some of them can start up outside of login items, and those you can't turn off, or at least you can't tell not to start up that way. But look in the login items list and see if there's anything listed there. Also, try to create a new user. And, you know, which is one of my favorite troubleshooting techniques. Create a new user with administrator privileges, log out as your existing user, log in as that user, and see if you can delete from there. Failing that, there's always single user mode, and then you can use John's RM-F, right?
Now, also, the other thing I would mention, I don't know Activity Monitor, what it comes up in.
Yeah.
I don't think it comes up, but there's a... menu in the upper right that has, you know, what level of stuff you want to see.
Yeah.
And there is an all processes setting. I'm not sure if it comes up like that in default.
It does not. No, you have to.
It may. Okay. That's why I was going to mention it. I believe it comes up in a mode where you may not be able to see all running processes.
Right.
So that's another tip. You may not be seeing all of reality. It may be only be showing you like user processes. What could be holding on could in fact be a, you know, root or system process that's holding on to that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But so a little tip there, Activity Monitor, make sure you're looking at all processes and that may help you zero in on it.
There you go. Hey, well, you know, while we're on the kind of on the subject, I wanted to mention something about Activity Monitor. Mm-hmm. One thing that you can do in Activity Monitor is, of course, you can set different columns. And we should talk about this with regards to RAM management, because I actually learned a lot, but we're not going to get that deep into it now because we're wrapping things up. However, there you can add a kind column, which on the Intel Macs is key because you can see exactly what's running and what mode it's running in, PowerPC mode or Intel mode. Very, very handy. Yeah. So I've been living in that. So.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like nice, but that's something else.
Nice is different, and we can talk about that some other time too. We should maybe next show we'll spend some time in Activity Monitor. In fact, it has now been said we will be in Activity Monitor next show.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here, and well, you got some new stuff
and new stuff, and some I've learned a lot about RAM management and figuring out what to look at and what to ignore. So we'll talk about that next show.
Well, but what is active?
We're gonna revisit an old topic quickly here. We had two audio comments, both of them, believe it or not, from the great state of New Hampshire. Two people sent in audio comments about disk utility, or rather about encrypting files to send over the internet. We talked about YouSendIt as a great way of sending files, and we had a couple. But it's not necessarily secure, as you mentioned, John. So. These two folks had had a couple of ideas, and we're going to let them share them with you now.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Brian from Southern New Hampshire. I was just listening to you guys talk about password protecting files for YouSendIt. And just the night before I was listening to this, I had finished e-filing my taxes, and I printed them out and also saved PDF files of everything. And I had a folder that I wanted to put up on my iDisk, but I didn't want it out there for everyone to see. You know, even though it's not in the public folder, I'm still a little weary of just putting it up there. So one thing that I do is if you go to Disk Utility, there's a file, new disk image from folder. And then when that dialog comes up, select your folder. And then on the bottom portion of that dialog, there's a encryption dropdown. Set that to AES-128. It'll ask you for a password and it'll create the encrypted disk image from the folder and you're good to go. So I just dropped that encrypted disk image on my iDisk and I'm feeling pretty good. So hope that can help someone. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, Mac Geeks. This is Ken from KenZickler.com with an answer to a question from an earlier podcast. The question was how to send a file securely so only the intended recipient could receive it. YouSendIt's a great utility for doing so. However, anyone who gets the URL can download the file you post. Found that the safest way to send files over the internet to another Mac user is to first make a disk image using Apple's Disk Utility program. When you create the new image, you can select AES 128-bit encryption and set a password. Mount the image and copy the files you want to send. This way, all you have to send is the image file. I also use this as a great way to store files on my machine that are confidential, such as banking information and passwords. Anyone who gets access to the file still needs the password in order to access it or even know what kind of files are in it. Keep up the great work with the podcast, guys. Thanks.
And thank you, Brian and Ken. And I think Ken actually lives not too far from me here in Durham, believe it or not. But I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, well, it's such a small state. You guys know each other, right?
Oh, my God. You got to get up here sometime.
I'm just kidding. No, I also got hollered at an email where someone said, you know, believe it or not, you know, New Hampshire's not all mooses and trees. And but you have mooses and we don't.
No, we do have a bear, believe it or not.
Really? But I thought moose, or was it when I was up in Vermont?
No, we have moose, well, in both places. Yeah, you have them in both. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
And there they are.
Okay.
It's time to get out.
What?
We've done enough damage for the evening. Don't you
but
think?
Those are good tips.
Yeah.
AES-128.
AES-128.
And ask for a password. Here's a tip, though.
Pick yeah, what's
good
the tip?
Password.
Pick.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
You have right. The strongest encryption if your password is password. That's really not going to help.
No, that's right. No, it's true.
That's an important caveat that's not mentioned a lot with encryption.
Yep. Don't pick a dictionary word. Pick random letters interspersed by vowels and numbers so that you can say it. I always try and do that, right? Pick a password that, you know, is consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, so that I can say it in my head and I'm not...
Say it, don't spray it.
I'm not compelled to write it down. That's right. All these great little tips. All right, well, next week we're going to talk about Activity Monitor. There might be a couple other things, of course, because, you know, 40 minutes of Activity Monitor would be a boring show. I keep thinking one of these shows is going
to some people, though, you know.
For some people.
Some people like the gab, some like the geek, some like both.
Some like both. That's right. So we do thank you for staying subscribed. Next week, like I said, we'll be that. I want to thank our sponsors, of course. Thanks to Think Different Store and Audio Engine USA, both at thinkdifferentstore.com and audioengineusa.com, respectively. This podcast has been downloaded from Cashfly Hosting, of course, and if you want to sponsor it, I think we've got a slot, maybe two, open later in March. You can contact the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Fill out the iTunes comments, folks. We love it when you spend the time to tell us and everyone else in the world what you think. And hey, remember our Frapper map? Have we ever talked about our Frapper map on the podcast itself?
It's on the show notes. I've seen it.
Yeah, I know, but have we mentioned it on the show? I don't know.
I think so.
Did I? Okay. Yeah. What do I know?
Go to the show notes.
I've had this cold for like 3 weeks. I tell you, this winter has been filled with health issues for me, and I'm usually a healthy guy. So.
And show notes can be found at MacGeekGab.com.
Yeah. Right? Audio comments. I wanted to say something. The Skype thing. I know there were a couple of comments out in Skype today. I couldn't pull them out because, of course, I do that on the MacBook and can't audio hijack from Skype on the MacBook at the moment. So there's a little issue there.
So,
sit tight. We'll figure it out. I can always do it up on this machine. So audio comments, Skype them to Mac Geek Gab. You can email them to MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. And the phone number to call and leave a comment is
206-666-GEEK.
Geek. That's it. We're out of here.
Podcast Alley.
You can vote at Podcast Alley. That's right. We got
or
a new month coming up.
We love the comments.
The comments
there's
at Podcast
one that
Alley.
Says, your show rocks my face off.
I'm not sure what that means.
I think it's a good thing.
I think it is a good thing. Thanks, folks. Stay subscribed. We'll see you next week.